of years is a long time.
I nodded.
I'm sorry, Mr. Okada,
he said.
This talk about the old days must be boring to a young fellow like you. I would like to add one more thing, though, and that is that we were just ordinary young men, the same as you. I never once thought I wanted to be a soldier. I wanted to be a teacher. As soon as I left college, though, they sent me my draft notice, stuck me in officer's training, and I ended up on the continent for 12 years. My life went by like a dream.
Lieutenant Mamiya clamped his mouth shut.
If you wouldn't mind,
I said after some time had passed,
I would very much like to hear the story of how you and Mr. Honda came to know each other.
I genuinely wanted to know what kind of man Mr. Honda had been before I met him. Hands placed precisely on his knees, Lieutenant Mamiya sat thinking about something. Not that he was uncertain as to what he should do. He was just thinking.
That story might be a long one,
he said. I don't mind, I said.
I've never told it to anyone. And I'm quite certain that Mr. Honda never told it to anyone either. The reason I say that is that we made a pact to keep this one thing secret. But Mr. Honda is dead now. I'm the only one left. It wouldn't hurt anyone if I told.
And so Lieutenant Mamiya began to tell me his story. 12. Lieutenant Mamiya's Long Story, Part 1.
I was shipped to Manchuria at the beginning of 1937,
Lieutenant Mamiya began.
I was a brand new second lieutenant then, and they assigned me to the Kwantung Army General Staff in Xingqing. Geography had been my degree in college, so I ended up in the Military Survey Corps, which specialized in map-making. This was ideal for me, because, to be quite honest, the duties I was ordered to perform were among the easiest that anyone could hope for in the Army. In addition to this, conditions in Manchuria were relatively peaceful, or at least stable. The recent China incident had moved the theater of military operations from Manchuria into China proper. The China Expeditionary Forces were the ones doing the fighting now, while the Kwantung Army had an easy time of it. True, mopping up operations were still going on against anti-Japanese guerrilla units, but they were confined to the interior, and in general the worst was over. All that the powerful Kwantung Army had to do was police our newly independent puppet state of Manchukuo while keeping an eye on the north. As peaceful as things supposedly were, it was still war, after all, so there were constant maneuvers. I didn't have to participate in those either, fortunately. They took place under terrible conditions. The temperature would drop to 40 or 50 degrees below zero. One false step in maneuvers like that and you could end up dead. Every single time they held such maneuvers, there would be hundreds of men in the hospital with frostbite, or sent to a hot spring for treatment. Xingqing was no big city, but it was certainly an exotic foreign place. And if you wanted to have fun there, it provided plenty of opportunities. New single officers like me lived together in a kind of rooming house rather than in barracks. It was more like an extension of student life. I took it easy, thinking that I would have nothing to complain about if my military service ended like this, just one peaceful day after another. It was, of course, a make-believe peace. Just beyond the edges of our little circle of sunshine, a ferocious war was going on. Most Japanese realized that the war with China would turn into a muddy swamp from which we could never extricate ourselves. Or at least any Japanese with a brain in his head realized this. It didn't matter how many battles we won, there was no way Japan could continue to occupy and rule over such a huge country. It was obvious if you thought about it.
and sure enough, as the fighting continued, the number of dead and wounded began to multiply. Relations with